Hello and welcome to another episode of Starside Chat. I am one of your hosts, Aaron, and with me as always is Zach. How's it going, Zach?
Pretty good. It's very spring-like here in the Midwest.
Yes, getting up to 72 where I'm at today. I'm going to take a walk today. I'm very excited about it.
It sounds like a good time. I might have to like go to a park and like listen to an audiobook and just like walk the track for a while.
Yeah. It's too bad we can't play, I guess we could play Pokemon Go still, but I feel like it's not as much a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's still out there, but I haven't played it in probably a couple of years now.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, but there was a Pokemon thing that we can talk about this week, and I've dipped my toes into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Zach, I don't want to bury the lead. I have not purchased a PS5 yet. I think I probably am going to at some point, but I for now do not have one, so I'm gonna have to live vicariously through you, and just your joys are my joys.
I was a little bit keeping my fingers crossed that you'd have a surprise announcement this week during the show that you had gotten a PS5 and started Final Fantasy, but
not yet. I was like, maybe there'll be a bundle, but right now the only bundle you can buy is like a Spider-Man bundle, which like, I'm fine. I don't really need to play Spider-Man, but I think probably there will be a Final Fantasy VII bundle at some point. But until then, I don't know. Final Fantasy, I think, is the only thing I would play on PlayStation 5 at the moment. And so I was just like, man, I need to buy this for more than one game.
Yeah, especially since you got a Xbox somewhat recently.
I know, I've got the Xbox and I can download Game Pass whenever I want, so not really a point. But speaking of, maybe it's a good thing that I don't own a PS5 right now, because our first news story is that Sony is rumored to be releasing a PS5 Pro this fall.
Yeah, so everybody was talking about how the PS5 Pro would be great to pick up ahead of GTA 6 because it will probably run best on that, especially compared to like the current PS5 and Xbox yep. Series X. I guess if you're thinking Nintendo was planning on having their next console come out this fall, and then obviously they had to push that back, but Xbox, you know, is rumored to have some sort of mid-gen upgrade as well coming soon.
All digital Series X, they say.
Yeah, and I thought, maybe I'm misremembering this, but I thought maybe Sony was like, well, yeah, we're not doing a mid-gen refresh, but now it sounds like they're going to do a PS5 Pro and that it's likely to come out sometime later this year. So do you think you'd hold out and pick this up?
I don't know. I feel like the summertime is really a time where I am like, man, I gotta take some time off and play some games. I feel like I get most of my game playing done around E3, or, you know, it doesn't exist anymore, but it's going to be hard to wait that long, I feel like. But if this is legitimate, then maybe I will. I don't know. This, like, the Pro might also make the current one cheaper is another thing. So maybe it makes sense. I don't know. I don't know what my plans are right now, but for now, I'm just kind of laying in wait.
Yeah, I am curious about how big an upgrade the mid-gen upgrades will be. Because it's hard to say for sure what Phil Spencer was talking about with like the Xbox. Was he talking about the next-gen console or like the mid-gen upgrade when he was our next console release is going to be the biggest upgrade you've ever seen or whatever.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that could just be marketing talk, but I'm curious just how big a power differential it'll be between like the mid-gen upgrades and the current consoles that are out.
I don't know. How big was the PS4 Pro as opposed to the 4? Because I never really engaged with the PS4 Pro.
I never had one either. I know that they gave the option to start playing games in like performance mode as opposed to like graphics mode, which basically if you had a PS4 and you were playing like God of War or something like that, then it was going to run at 30 frames a second and there was nothing you could do about it. But if you had a PS4 Pro, you could you had the option to switch to performance mode, and then it would like prioritize, your frame rate, which is like appealing to me, but I never did upgrade. So I don't.
Well, that actually brings up a good point. We don't have to start talking about Final Fantasy VII yet, but are you playing it in performance mode or graphics mode?
In performance mode. I pretty much always will favor performance over the graphics mode. But so like to me that would be worthwhile, but like the PS5 already has that option. So I'm like, well, what would the Pro give me?
What's the secret third option?
Yeah, what's the PS5 Pro going to give me that I don't have on the current PS5? And I don't know the answer to that, but I guess we'll find out. So speaking of Sony, there was some bad news this last week. They laid off around like 900 people across like multiple studios.
Crazy that like it hit everybody. Like even people at Naughty Dog who had been there for like 16 years got fired.
Yeah, and I do think a lot of this is still tied to like that pandemic era where everybody was like staffing up to like, you know, power through releasing games while everybody was working remotely and like demand was way up. And I think some of that is still like we're just like exiting that still and realizing that they overhired and they're having to release people. But also, I don't know, I feel like it's a weird market for games because we're seeing a lot of games that are selling super well and somehow we're still getting these like massive rounds of layoffs. So I'm not really quite sure what to make of the situation.
Yeah. It's weird. Because the next news story is EA also is just laid off like 670 employees, which we talked about this last week. This is probably the fastest turnaround we've ever had. But last week we talked about a rumored Mandalorian Bounty Hunter game that Respawn is going to be making. And this week they were like, JK, that's canceled.
Yeah.
You heard about it last week. It's not happening this week.
I think we knew that there was going to be like a Star Wars first person game that they were making, but we didn't know it was like the detail that it was a Mandalorian game was the thing that released recently. And yeah, like a week later, that's now they're canceling that game and a bunch of people got laid off.
Yeah.
I don't know again what to make of it because I feel like Respawn has been doing pretty well between like Apex and some of their other stuff that they've released, but
they make Jedi Survivor, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what that game sold like, but I didn't think it was doing poorly, but
no,
maybe
I don't know. Not a great time to be working in the games industry. Also, this isn't in our show notes, but speaking of GTA, Jason Schreier had an article this week that Rockstar is enacting a return to office policy, which apparently the staff is like not too keen on. But supposedly it's to lock down security because obviously they had that huge leak a couple years ago about GTA 6.
Yeah.
And so as they're nearing release, I think they are looking to tighten all the hatches.
Yeah. And I think we've seen a lot of companies do that sort of post-pandemic era. I still feel like we're just like a lot of companies are like slowly coming out of that era and realizing one, they overstaffed, but also like, maybe it is better to not just be like permanently working remotely, but I don't know. I think a lot of this news maybe comes back to that, but hopefully things stabilize a little bit and it's less volatile for people working in the industry. Cause this is absurdly high number of people being impacted by this. So
I feel like every week we hear about more layoffs from a different company.
Yeah.
But some good news. There was a giant press release, or not even a release, a
preview.
What would you call this? Yeah, they gave a bunch of outlets the ability to play No Rest for the Wicked.
Yeah, and they also put out like it was like a 20-minute, almost like one of those Bethesda deep dive videos.
Yes, I watched that as well
on YouTube, where they talked about the game. This is Moon Studios, the makers of Ori and the Blind Forest and Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which I just played Will of the Wisps earlier this year and really loved it. I don't know. Something about their visual style is like really good.
They're keeping that intact for this. So if you haven't seen this, No Rest for the Wicked is top down. It's like isometric. And you are it takes place in this unique world, and I don't really remember the plot of it, but you wash up on an island, basically, and that's where the I almost said the show starts, but where the game starts. And I was texting you about this. It's giving me like real Mark of Cree vibes, which is a game I think you didn't play, but I believe it was on PlayStation or PlayStation 2. And that was another game where it was kind of like not necessarily third person, like you were kind of zoomed out from the action, similar to this. It's not third person. It's like, you know, how would you call this isometric or top down?
Yeah, it's like kind of top down or isometric.
But really like visceral combat where like you have to kind of pay attention. Every weapon you equip has a different fighting style, basically. And so you sort of have to adapt to that. There's parrying and things like that. There's also spells. There's a really cool segment of their walkthrough where they go over like how a mage would handle situations, which seems really cool. But I have to say, I really liked the look of this.
I did too. I liked what they said where they were talking about how like the moves were tied to the different weapons and everything. And so it is like, it's not like a lot of other RPGs where you basically have to commit to like a certain play style because that's where you've allotted your points or whatever. This, it seems like it's going to be more flexible where you could be like, okay, I'm going to just swap my build by equipping different things. And now I'm just like, you know, I have a really different combat style. Which seemed cool to me. Game Informer has some articles up on it because I think it's their cover story coming up. And they described it as a dark fantasy action RPG that combines Diablo with Dark Souls and a little bit of like town building from Animal Crossing. But
yeah, because there is a main town you go to and you can like buy property there and build out a house and stuff.
Yeah. So you buy a house and you can like decorate it and build stuff there. So that seems crazy to me. I know. Yeah. They released like a beta version of this for some like streamers and YouTube content creators to play as well. And so I did see some people streaming it and it does seem like a very beautiful looking game.
Yeah, their painterly art style is just gorgeous.
Yeah, and they have like a whole like release plan for this. So it's going to come out in early access in April. And they've got like, they're going to slowly be adding more content to it as it goes. I don't know. Like they also talked a little bit about in-game stuff, but like that's so far beyond because I have no experience in the game. So I don't know. like what to make of that, but it looks really cool. This has been on my list of anticipated games for a while. And the more I see of it, the more I like it. So I'm definitely going to check this out when it comes out.
I agree. So there was also a Pokemon Presents, which I don't think either of us watched live. No. I think it was pretty short. They announced a bunch of stuff that no one really cared about, I think, but I believe they ended with a reveal that there's going to be a new Legends game, like that Legends Arceus, or how would you say that?
Arceus, maybe? I'm not sure.
There's a new Legends game called ZA. I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce this. It's either Z-A, or I think it's ZA. But it seems to take place in the zone that was the X and Y area, which I believe is Paris, or like the Pokemon analog for Paris. So X, Y, and now this is Z. But it's like, I think before that city got built up, because the Legend series kind of take place in the past. So it's interesting. You played Arceus, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't play very far into it. That was sort of the beginning of my awareness that maybe I'm just like not into Pokemon anymore.
Yeah, even though it was kind of a different kind of Pokemon.
Yeah, it was a different kind of Pokemon, and I kind of like some of the stuff they were doing with it. I just like, I don't know if there were other games out at the time as well, but I didn't like, I played through maybe the first boss that you sort of face and I was like, yeah, that was fine, and then I just kind of fell off of it and moved on. But people liked it because it was something different. But I don't know. I do see this going on as like a sort of spinoff series alongside the mainline series from here on out. The question that I have is, how is it going to run?
Great question. Because I wonder if it'll be, I don't think there was a release date for this, but I wonder if this will be a title that is going to be on the new Switch or if this is coming out this year.
Yeah, that's a good question. They almost always have a Pokemon release towards the end of the year. Yeah. Just about always. So I could see this maybe being like one, if it is a game that they maybe initially were targeting the next version of the Switch, whatever that ends up being, it could be one of those things that's like sort of a multi-gen release, sort of, so to speak. But
Nintendo has a record of doing that, because famously they were developing Breath of the Wild for the Wii U, yeah, to the point, yeah, where true, your Sheikah Slate looks like your Wii U, but it's mostly played on Switch. So I wonder if this will be a cross-platform type of thing.
It's a good question. Yeah, I don't plan on picking this up, but I think people like where the way they were going with the Legends series, so it might have a chance to do pretty well for them. I mean, it's Pokemon, so it's going to do well, but put it on Steam and see how it does.
Now that's an interesting proposition, yeah.
They won't do that, but, you know. Let's talk Stardew Valley.
I talked about this maybe last week or the week before, but there was this 1.6 update that Concerned Ape is making, and it finally has a release date. It is coming out on March 19th, and there's going to be a new festival, a ton of new dialogue, a lot of really interesting things, a new farm type. I think I talked about all of this like last week or the week before, but just to confirm, this is it's coming out March 19th. So if you're waiting to start a new, he does recommend starting a new farm for this update, because there's a ton of stuff throughout the game that you'll see, which you might miss if you log back into your session that you're already like past year three or whatever. So if you're looking to start a new Stardew, you might want to wait just like a couple weeks, and 1.6 will come out. It's coming out for PC first, and then as soon as possible for consoles. So if you're a PC player, March 19th is your date. But if you're a Switch player or anywhere else, basically, you will have to wait. But I talked about this last week, he was bummed out that it took so long for the 1.5 update to get kind of propagated to other platforms besides PC. So he said he's worked really hard to make it so that that gap is shortened. So hopefully not soon after, or like very soon after March 19th, everything else will get it. But usually mobile is the last place to get it. So just laying in wait. If you play on PC, March 19th is your date. So get ready.
I would you jump back in and check this stuff out, you think?
I would, I think. I definitely started a new farm when 1.5 came out. And I feel like I would do that again for 1.6, because I only ever get to like year two. I've never actually completed a full 3 years.
Yeah, that's the problem for me as well, is I will start it out and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm loving this. And then I will always like fall off before
something else comes out, or it's just something happens. I think it will be good on, because I have only ever played it on PC, but I might check it out on Switch.
Yeah, it could be good there. I know, like for me last year, I went through like a weird phase where I was like, I just need something like pretty chill. And so I thought about jumping back into Stardew Valley, but I ended up playing Animal Crossing instead. If there had been this update, then I probably would have played this instead. But
well, you never know. Maybe you'll get back in that mood.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, right now I got enough other things to play that it's not a problem. But
Next Fest happened, I think, last week or the week before. I wanted to shout out two games that I thought were interesting. The first, I can't remember if I talked about this already, but there's a game called Mullet Mad Jack, and I watched someone do a playthrough of the demo. It's very unique because there's like a timing-based thing where when you get... So basically, this is a Hotline Miami type of thing where... I mean, it's first person. It's a first-person game where you're running in and you're like beating people up, and it's like retro sci-fi, people are robots and things like that. But the hook of this one is that it's kind of like roguelike, and you pick upgrades for your guns. Like after every room, you can get like a modifier. And the most important thing is you have to kill something every 10 seconds, because you're basically a Twitch streamer. but like the Twitch chat is like plugged into your blood or something like that. And so if you, that you like, once you're like holding up the phone to look at your likes or whatever, you have a countdown that's constantly going. And so you're running through this thing and you have to kill something at least, like every kill like resets the timer basically or adds seconds to it. And so it's like this really frenetic gameplay where you can't, you don't really have time to like look left and right. You kind of just have to find the next enemy and get to them. The next best demo didn't have any, like, there is supposedly going to be like vehicle segments, but there wasn't any vehicle segments in the next test demo. It has interesting boss fights as well. There were two boss fights in the demo that are not timed, so you could just have as much time as you need, but it's cool. You have like a big revolver. It reminds me of Ion Maiden, or what is Ion Maiden called now? It's not Ion Maiden, Ion Fury.
Oh yeah.
Because you have like a big revolver and like a shotgun, and you can get a sword also.
I was gonna say it looked a little bit like a boomer shooter, but it, yeah, like a roguelike version. And it's what is that Jason Statham movie where he has to like keep his heartbeat up or whatever?
It's very much like Crank, actually. It's probably inspired by Crank.
But like crazy, like very 80s like synthwave art style that I, like, I'm kind of a sucker for that art style and aesthetic. So this is doing something for me, even though I don't normally play this type of game.
It looks fun. I'm excited for the full release. The other one I wanted to highlight is a game called Nimrods. Or Nimrods : Guncraft Survivor. It's a Vampire Survivors-like, but the hook of this one is that your like updates you get every time, like, because there are still the orbs you pick up or whatever, but your every level, you get the option to like mod your gun, basically. And so it's similar to sort of, what was that other game? Enter the Gungeon, kind of, where like you're getting new interesting guns. But you're crafting them. So you end up with like these crazy looking guns that you've put a bunch of weird mods on by the end of a run. But that's, I thought, was just an interesting twist on Vampire Survivor.
I like a Vampire Survivors. Like, I still kind of want to go at some point. I would like to go back and check out that Deep Rock Galactic Survivor.
Yeah, people are saying that's really good, actually.
So I wouldn't mind checking that out at some point, but have not had time to do that just yet. With that said, do we want to talk about Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth? Because I have completed it.
Yes. How would you rate it? Because you fully completed the first Like a Dragon. So how would you rate it compared to that one?
I liked it better. I think some of that is because of the Hawaiian setting. But also, I don't know, just something, maybe the mood struck me a little bit better with this one. But I was like fully on board for this one the whole way through. And I like the updates and changes they made to combat. So we talked about that previously. I think it is better combat wise than the last one. But also like the mini games are so much better too. Like that business management mini game from the last one was something I had to look up a guide for. And I just felt like I was like plowing my way through it just to finish it so that I could get the rewards from it. Which is pretty great. You should do it if you're going to play that game. You should do the business management mini game because you get like an extra character out of it and a lot of money. And there's a chapter in that game where one of your party members is like separated from you. And so if you don't have that extra character, you're just like down a party member. And there's like a pretty tough boss fight. Aren't you like fighting a wrecking ball or something at one point? I feel like
in the first one, yeah.
I feel like that was particularly difficult because if you don't have like a full party, it would have been pretty tough, but I was able to get through it because I had that extra party member.
Yeah.
But this game, the Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, I feel like is way less grindy. Maybe it's because I like really took my time with it and like tried to complete everything that I was just like, I felt almost overleveled for almost everything the whole
time. Really?
Like when there was like the dungeon stuff, like I would try to go through that. And there was maybe only one time where I found the boss too difficult to beat. And that was one of the dungeon bosses, which is completely optional, but you get like items and stuff like that. And so I tried to go through it, and maybe it's because I completed all that stuff. I feel like the last game there was like, you would get these really big difficulty spikes with some of the story bosses. And there came a time where you go to a place and it's like, here's a dungeon for you. And I'm like, okay, clearly you want me to grind here. Mm. And I like got, I barely made it through one of the chapter boss fights in that game. And I was like, okay, let me look up like what is the recommended level for the next boss fight. And so I found myself just like halting all progress to just like grind through that dungeon in order to like level up my characters. And it took like a long time. And I never went through anything like that with this game. I feel like this game, maybe if you're not trying to like do everything in the game, you might find that you need to stop at some point and like go through the dungeons to make sure that you're leveled up a little bit, or maybe you're geared up. But like, it always will tell you when you're about to start a new, like big sort of chapter, fight sequence type of a thing. Mm-hmm. It'll be like, here's the recommended level and here's the recommended like gear level as well. Like you need to be level 39 with like 6-star gear or whatever. And it's like, okay, I can work on that. I can make sure I'm at that point. And I was always like, every time I got to that and that screen popped up, I was like, oh yeah, I'm like good to go. Don't need to worry about it. But also like if you complete the Animal Crossing thing, the Dondoko Island, Ichiban just like has this like orbital laser beam strike that he can use that trivialized a lot of the combat later in the game for me. Some people might not like that, but I was fully on board. I was like, oh yeah, if there's like a big group of enemies that the game wants to throw at me, no problem. I'm just going to Dondoko beam these guys. And it would just be like a one shot on all of them. It was so funny. But there, it also is such a weird game because you can like, at one point I had been riding a trolley, taking pictures of sickos doing that, what is that? That Pokemon Snap style mini game. Mm-hmm. And like 5 minutes later, I was in this like, you know, emotional, like story beat, and somehow it all works. You can have it in that close proximity. And this game is just like such a wild thing where it has so many, like it goes really weird, really different places all the time. And it's so fun and so, charming in a lot of ways, but weird in a lot of other ways, and somehow it all works, and it's not like other games that I have played. So I don't know. I loved it. There are things that maybe we could talk about towards the end that I think would be spoilers. I don't know if we want to get into them.
I actually think I will probably pick this game up. I don't have a PS5 right now, but I have been itching to play something, and so I feel like maybe this is my thing.
It's so good. I highly recommend it. It can be a long game depending on how much time you want to put into it, but
yeah,
they're so good with like the writing and the characters. Like there's a sort of a villain in the first couple of chapters that you run into named Yamai. And where this game goes with that character, like I did not expect it at all. They like flesh that character out in ways that I did not expect. And there's like a scene later on with him that like, they're just like, they do such a good job, like fleshing out the characters, and they're so well written that it's like, I don't know. And that they kind of do similar things with the other side characters as well. Cause they bring in like a bunch of new characters. There are some like twists and turns along the way. I don't know. I love this game. I would like to talk about it more specifically, but I feel like we shouldn't do that, especially if you're probably going to play it at some point. But
I think I will, yeah.
But yeah, you should definitely play it, and we'll maybe deep dive on it a little bit more at some
point. Did they leave it open for a sequel?
I mean, it's definitely open to a point where like they will go forward with these games, I assume. Like the Ichiban is not dead, for instance, so they're going to continue on with Ichiban Kasuga. And so, yeah, I feel like they will definitely make more of these.
I really want to talk about Final Fantasy VII, but before we do, because we're kind of skipping over to what we're playing, watching, I wanted to shout out I think we've talked about Heroic Trio on the podcast before, but it's a great old classic Michelle Yao movie, or she's in it at least. I love this movie, and I own a copy of it, in quotes. but the Criterion Collection edition of it is coming out, or it's out now. So if you are looking for a great classic kung fu movie that is just really weird and off the wall at times, and you like Michelle Yao, check out Heroic Trio. It's on Criterion now, and I have heard the transfer is really good. Like, the color grading and everything is excellent, and I think it's got a bunch of special features and stuff. So Heroic Trio, available now. Check that out. And then also, before we get into all the things you're watching and playing, because you're watching and playing more things than me, I have been rewatching Supernatural with my girlfriend. Did you ever watch that show?
I didn't. And a lot of people have told me that they like this show, but I've never watched it.
The first season is a little rough. Like, maybe it was just the time that it was made, but it's like super desaturated. Like, everything is just like blue and brown and kind of not great to look at. And also, I've clocked this at least three times, and I think we've watched like maybe five episodes. They a lot of times will do that thing where they don't have a shot, so they will reverse a shot so they get the shot, where like they need someone to like look meaningfully at someone, but they only have a shot of them looking away from someone. And so they'll cut to that shot and it's reversed. You can tell it's reversed if you're looking for it. And then they'll kind of like whip back to what they were looking at, and then the frame will freeze for a second like they're looking at someone. I watched a lot of this show in college, and I remember being into it. The reason I have binged in it lately is because I am thinking about running a Monster of the Week campaign for a couple people, and that has gotten me more into the Monster of the Week style show, and this is a classic one. I don't know if we're going to keep watching it after season one, because like I said, season one is pretty rough. I think it does get better. I'm trying to remember when specific characters come into play. But it's on Hulu if you're interested in watching it. Although you do have to watch the ads, unless you have like the free version of Hulu, or the like ad-free version of Hulu that's more expensive. But those are the two things that I played a little Apex, but we don't need to talk about that. I want to talk about, what do you want to talk about first? Because you've watched Dune 2 and you've also started Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Well, since you have not seen Dune 2, I won't talk very specifically about that. So we can talk vaguely about Dune 2. I really liked it. I thought it was great. Definitely worth seeing on the big screen. It is like Hans Zimmer's music is great in that. But also like what's his name? The actor. What is his name? Timothée Chalamet. The main
Wonka
character
himself.
From... yeah, and Liza P. He's that guy too. Unofficially. But no, he's great in it. He like really, in the last movie, I feel like he was very sort of quiet and stoic and sort of like trying to figure out what was going on. He gets more of a chance to like shine in this movie, and he does. So very good. I haven't read the books myself, but I went with someone who did, and they said this sort of gets to the end of the first book. So the last movie, I guess, got somewhere to maybe halfway through. I don't know exactly where you put it on a timeline of like what actually happens in the books. But for context, for people who have read the books, this gets towards the end of that. And then I guess Denis Villeneuve thought of this as a trilogy, and there's a bunch of Dune books, so I don't know how he's going to wrap it up or how much of the content he intends to cover. But
I read that Hans Zimmer has already started composing music for the third one.
I believe it. I mean, I would assume they're already in some way, shape, or form working on the next one, even if it's just like script writing stuff. But
yeah.
Great soundtrack. I would love to pick up a vinyl copy of it at some point. I did see, I forget who it was, maybe IGN was like, hey, check out this awesome looking cover art for the vinyl release of Dune 2's soundtrack or whatever. And I was like, oh, yeah, that looks cool. Very good movie. Highly recommend. And with that, let's get into Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Very excited. So, I don't remember. Did you play Intergrade or did you skip that?
I did play it. I went back and played that because it came out. It was one of those weird things where it was only available on PS5.
Yeah.
So if you had a PS4, you couldn't play Intergrade. But I have not met up with Yuffie yet, but I know she's in the game from trailers.
Now, you did you get, because I think if you have a save file for Remake, you get like a two special summons and like a Moogle charm. Did you get those?
Yeah, it did give me some items at the beginning. I don't remember what they were. It was like, hey, we're gonna read your save files and here's some items. And I was like, oh,
I think
okay.
You get like Ifrit and Shiva from the last game.
Oh yeah, I do have those, so yeah, that must have been what it was. Yeah, I'm doing a little bit more with Chadley this time around.
Famously,
we talked about Chadley in the last game and how
we love Chadley.
Did not interact with him very much in the previous game, but it is like the last game I felt like was more linear than this one. Yeah. This one is still linear, but you like it's sort of broken up by these open worldy areas. They're sort of open zones, I guess, but they're like pretty large areas to explore. And I a little bit wonder if this is maybe part of the reason why some of the reviews might be not as high as the previous one, even though I think it is still reviewing well. But people seem to not like the, I don't know, open world games anymore, or like the sort of Ubisoft style open world where you get to an open world and it's like, here's a handful of activities and you're going to do these in each zone. This sort of has that where it's like, I'm going to go to this tower and activate it and it's going to put some icons on my map for me. I don't mind that as a thing, but I
think if the gameplay is good, like Far Cry 3 and Far Cry 4 are like, you know, quintessential Ubisoft games where you climb a tower, you reveal the map, there's stuff on the map you do the stuff. But I think that works in that and probably in this because the gameplay of doing that stuff is so fun. Like, I would love to climb a tower in Far Cry 4 and then just like wingsuit over to a compound and try to take it down in an interesting way. And I could do that 1,000 times, and the game wants you to do it 1,000 times. But the gameplay of doing it is so fun that it's like such a good loop that so I think if the loop is good, open world can be good. But if the loop is like tedious, then I think that can lead to a bad open world.
Yeah, I don't know how it's gonna last with people, because a lot of these opinions, like the initial ones, will come out and it'll be positive, and then over time, kind of like we saw with Starfield, people will just be like, nah, this is not good or whatever.
Yeah,
so I don't know if this game will suffer a little bit in people's minds because of that, but I think story-wise this is gonna like keep people going well enough to like, yeah, we can overlook some of that stuff. But it does have like, so you also go to, I've completed the Grasslands and I'm almost done with Junon, which is sort of the first two regions you encounter. And in each of those, you'll like, you have to go find like a chocobo and sort of capture them, I guess, or what is the word I'm looking for there? You sort of jump on their back and that's your chocobo now.
Yeah.
And then you can like call them in and ride them around. And in Junon, the specific type of chocobo there can like climb walls, which is really crazy. But it has other activities, like you got to kind of herd Moogles around in like a weird area, and then you'll fight different creatures. And I already talked about like activating towers and stuff like that, but yeah, and all of that is like gathering intel for Chadley, and then you go back to Chadley and you talk to him, and he's like, hey, you can do these combat simulator challenges or whatever, and obviously some of them are like, maybe it's like one per zone is like, hey, do complete this and you'll get a new summon. And so I have like the Titan summon, which is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I think Phoenix is the one from June on, and I haven't done that one yet, but I don't know. Combat is a little hit or miss for me.
Really?
I never ended up liking it in the last one. I'm starting to understand it better in this one, but it's not like, because sometimes it just feels a little too chaotic to me. It's not like in Elden Ring, right? It's 1v1. You kind of know, like, it's difficult, but you know sort of where the attacks are coming from, and you know you can dodge them or parry them or block them or whatever. In this game, it's like I've got three characters that I'm managing, and there's like several enemies, and sometimes I'll get attacked from off screen and I don't know it's coming. And so, like, yes, you can dodge, yes, you can block, but sometimes timing that is like super difficult. And it's not always like if you're in the middle of doing an attack, you can't like dodge out of it or block out. You just have to wait for it to complete. And so if an enemy hits you, it will like stun you, and then you just get hit by every follow-up attack after that. And it's like super frustrating, because it's like I'm mashing the block button, I'm mashing the dodge button to get out of this, and I just have to sit there and take every single subsequent attack after that until the sequence is completed. And it's just like, that never feels good. And so you have moments like that, but then you also have like the moments where you pull off like a crazy attack, like maybe you bring in a summon, or maybe you use like one of their limit breaks, or you even like you have these sort of combo attacks that you can do with the other characters. And there's a lesser combo, I don't even know how they designate them, but like if you hold the R1 button and you press like one of the face buttons, sometimes you'll do these like team up attacks. Like with Barrett, he'll like fire around at Cloud's sword, and Cloud will reflect the shot at the enemy, and it does more damage than like just shooting them. But also the benefit of that is, since you're both attacking, you're filling both characters' ATB gauges pretty quickly. And so then you have, instead of having to like just, you know, fill Cloud's and then use one of Cloud's abilities and then swap over to Barret and then shoot an enemy until you can use one of his abilities, you're sort of building both of them at the same time. And so that's pretty effective and fun to do. But yeah, I don't know. I've had some difficulties with things and with the combat, because sometimes it's frustrating and sometimes it feels really good. And so it's a little hit or miss for me on that. But I am playing it on normal. I'm not playing it on the easy mode. We talked about with the last game, we both got frustrated by bosses. Yeah. And so we just turned it down to easy. And like, whatever. I just want the story. I'm kind of not into this combat. And
move on from there. This is a little off topic, but is there an easy mode in Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth?
It does not have any difficulty options for your first playthrough.
What happens in your second playthrough?
I think there's like a more difficult mode. I don't think it goes down to easy in the second one, but there is like a new game plus in that game, but I think you have to pay for it. It's like one of the weird things about Like a Dragon. But anyway, with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, there's like easy, normal, and then dynamic difficulty, but it's not clear to me what the dynamic one means, because it's supposed to like adjust to you. But I don't know if that means bouncing back between like normal and like a harder difficulty, or if it like will sometimes dip down to easy if you've like died a bunch of times. So it's not clear to me what that one meant. There's also like, you know, the like combat, there's like the normal mode that where you're doing all the attacks. And there's also like a classic like combat style that you can switch to, where the attacks happen automatically and then you like queue up attacks.
Interesting.
But it's not turn-based. So it's not like going back to the turn-based mode. And I also like, in Googling what that meant, like the classic combat style, they were like, yeah, it's not very good, because your characters will, I don't know, they just kind of do their own thing and they don't always do the smart thing. And so sometimes they will die easier that way than if you were controlling them. But I don't know, if you're playing it on easy and you switch to classic, maybe that's like the, if you're just a fan of getting through the story and you don't care that much about the combat, maybe that's the way to go. But
okay, that makes sense.
And then there's a couple of mini games that I've played already in this game. So you do like the Queen's Blood card game.
Yeah, how is that? That's the main thing I've seen in previews where people are like, oh, this is fun, but I'm like, I don't know if I like this.
I kind of liked it, but then again, I'm also playing like Balatro, which is another True. Card game. But it plays out, so there are like three lanes, and basically you're on the left side, the person you're playing is on the right side, and you're just playing cards in each of the lane, and each card has like a point value, and you're trying to outscore your opponent in each lane. And if you do that, then you win that lane. And if you win the lane, then the points that you accumulated from the cards you played go towards your final score. And so you would think, well, as long as I win two of the lanes, I will always win. But I did, like, at one point score enough in one lane that even though I lost the other two lanes, I still won the game. it does seem like there's a good amount of strategy to it. I like played around where it seemed like it was evolving a little bit, where they were like, now there are new types of cards that you haven't encountered before, and they can like, if they play this type of card, it could like lower your score in this other lane or whatever. And so I was like, oh, this is like, it's going to keep changing and evolving as I go through this, I'm sure, as they introduce different card types to me. I've had to try them multiple times sometimes, but I have been able to complete all of the Queen's Blood games that I've encountered along the way. But and then the other one, I don't remember if we were talking about this before we started recording or after, but there's that Fort Condor game.
Yeah,
that's sort of tied to a side quest. In Junon, you end up playing a bunch of Fort Condor. I mean, it's optional because it's a side quest, I think, but I went through it all. And that game, I think, is more frustrating to me than the Queen's Blood minigame, but it's still fun in its own way. It's just kind of the last sort of fight, I guess you would call it, in that was like pretty annoying to me. Because it seemed like you're on like a 2 or 3 minute timer, and you have to basically send troops you're just like calling in different troops, and you have this recharging amount of resources that you can use to call in different troops, and you're sending them down two different lanes, and you want to defend your side and attack the other side. But that last one was super annoying because it seemed like I was unable to defeat the boss that you're supposed to be attacking with the troops you're sending in before the time ran out. And I had to do that one multiple times to finish it. And that one, unlike the card game, you're not like picking up new cards to use for Condor, at least not yet. You do have like a couple of different options for like the type of strategy you want to employ, but even swapping that up, I found it kind of annoying. But I liked it better in the Intergrade DLC when I played it in that. I was like, oh yeah, this is kind of fun. But I don't know, maybe I was just not in the mood for it with this one, but I powered through and finished that up.
In the original, the Fort Condor minigame was, I found to be super frustrating, but a great thing about it was that if you failed it, they would just start attacking you. So the Fort Condor, I don't know how similar it is in the new games, but in the Fort Condor game in the original, you were at the top of a mountain, and troops were trying to climb the mountain to get to you, and you had to put things in their way for them to, like, you know, either fight or get trapped in or whatever. But if they made their way all the way to you, all that resulted was just like a battle would happen. And so the last time I played on, I think, Switch, where you could like speed everything up and have your limit break all the time. I just like didn't really put down a lot of traps or anything and just let them all come to me and like bypassed that by just doing all the fights myself, which was great. But I don't know, how similar is it? Is it like a, I don't even, because I didn't play Intergrade. Like, is it a like thing where you have to like, there are different waves that you have to get through?
No, so there, you're sort of, your side is closest to the screen and you kind of move up and there's like the middle area and there's sort of two lanes that you can send guys through. And basically, it sort of uses like a weapon triangle, like sword beats bow and bow beats like defense or like the blue shield guys. And then the shield guys are stronger against like the sword guys. And you're sending them down the two different lanes. And yeah, if somebody, if the enemy calls in like a bow person and he starts walking down the left lane and you've sent guys down the right lane, you need to wait for your little thing to charge up so that you have enough to be able to call in somebody. And you would probably call in like a sword guy because he's weak to that. And you would put them in the way of that person as he's coming down to attack your side. So I guess it's somewhat similar, but it, you don't fight them if they make it all the way down to your side. You just have to defend them. But yeah, I never played the original, so I don't know what Fort Condor looked like in the old games. But yeah, I'm not super far in the story yet. I think I'm maybe in Chapter 4, which is where you get into the Junon region. I've like kind of taken my time with it, exploring each of the open zone areas as I've gotten to them. And that's sort of partly why I'm slowly trudging through the story at this point. But I'm enjoying it so far. It's really just trying to wrap my head around the combat, because the combat is also like such that there are so many different options to you at any time. It's like, well, okay, what is the best option and what should I be doing more of that I'm not doing to make this easier on myself? Because like, I know you can like assess the enemies and like, okay, they're weak to this type of elemental attack, so maybe throw more spells at it or whatever. But I don't know. I'm going to come around on the combat, but right now it's still a little bit hit or miss for me. But yeah, the opening chapter I think was in the demo that I did not play, but it's like sort of a memory, I guess you would call it, where he's like telling Barret and Tifa and Aerith about the time he was hanging out with Sephiroth.
Yeah, that's what happens in the original game. Right after you get out of Midgar, you go through like his backstory.
Okay. But yeah, some of that feels like context I vaguely was aware of because of Crisis Core. Like I played through that re-release of Crisis Core that they did, and I was like, oh, this is like similar, but almost a little bit different because you're playing as Zack and not Cloud. And then Zack gives his Buster Sword to Cloud. And so I can't quite square how the events tie together. It doesn't quite overlap in my mind yet. Maybe I just don't understand what I'm looking at yet. But I thought that was interesting, that it seems like what they're trying to do, because they have so many different like Final Fantasy VII side stories and like different, like there was the movie and there was like these other Final Fantasy VII games that are not Final Fantasy VII, but they're like in the same story. And what they're trying to do with this game is to bring it all together and make it make sense. Anyway, ask me anything about the first four chapters.
Do you like it?
I do like it.
That's all I need to know.
It's, I mean, you love Final Fantasy VII and know it better than I do. So yeah. I feel like you will definitely be into this, but
I'm excited to play it at some point in my future, but I don't know when that will be.
Next week.
Maybe next week.
Do you have anything else playing, watching?
Not really. I've been kind of busy with this new cat that I have, which eagle-eared listeners. Well, let's see if you might have to rewind this podcast. But right when we started talking about No Rest for the Wicked and I was talking, he jumped on my back with his claws and I had to sort of figure that out as I was talking. So you might be able to rewind this podcast and hear me in pain for a second.
I'll keep that in mind as I'm editing this podcast later. Do you have any parting wisdom?
Yeah, you know what? So I talked about playing at Monster of the Week, possibly running a Monster of the Week game for my friends. I use Foundry. I've been using Foundry to play. It's a virtual tabletop environment where you can use different game systems. And I've been using it for Pathfinder for, you know, over a year at this point, I think. And it's great, and I love it. And I'm going to use it for Monster of the Week. And because of that, I'm sort of like getting some assets ready. And I wanted to talk about Gemini for a second. Have you used Gemini at all, Zach?
The AI?
Yeah.
No.
I am generally anti, like, AI art or whatever.
I was going to say, the only thing I know about it is the news stories that have come out about how it's kind of racist.
Yeah, it's bad for a lot of reasons. But I will say I needed a picture. I needed just a big picture of a bulletin board. The game I'm running is going to be set in like a college in like 1999. And I thought it would be cool to make a welcome page that is just like a bulletin board with interactable little post-its on it that you can click for different information. But if you Google like bulletin board, college bulletin board, blank bulletin board, all of those are things you have to pay for, unfortunately. And I didn't want to pay like $12.99 for access to like a stock image archive or whatever. However, and again, I'm anti-AI art because I think it is bad for a lot of reasons. But in this instance, I was like, generate me a college bulletin board with blank post-its that are like, you know, stuck with thumbtacks. It did it immediately. And it was the exact dimensions that I needed. And I was able to like use that. So I don't know. It was useful for that. And then I was like, oh, I wonder if I could get a logo for the college this fake college that I'm going to set my game in. And so I was just like, generate a logo for this college with like this mascot. And it took it a couple of times, but eventually it got to something where I was like, oh yeah, I could definitely use this as a logo for my college. So yeah, I don't know where I guess my parting wisdom is that like, if you need stuff, check out Gemini, but also be aware of the ethical dilemma that you're doing.
I was going to say, I would say maybe don't use Gemini as my parting wisdom.
Yeah.
I would say avoid it at all costs, but yeah. In part because of the art thing that you talked about, yeah. I mean, it can be useful. Like what's the other one? The other AI where you can like give it a writing prompt of some sort?
ChatGPT.
Yeah. I've used that sparingly and like, to help come up with like ideas for things. But I would say don't use it in like a work setting or a school setting.
I would say never use it in work or school. But if you're just running a little D&D campaign and you need a picture of like a goblin holding some spaghetti, search for that first and see if you can find it legitimately. But if you can't, then you can generate it.
Yeah. But yeah, find one other than Gemini would be, because there are a lot of them out there at this point. But
true.
On that note, go ahead and follow us at Starside Cafe on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.